I'm here with Oladele Bamboye during his current exhibition at Anne Faginato. Oladele, sitting here looking around at your work, which spans almost 10 years, or just over 10 years, there's so many layers in this work here which really interested me. Diaspora, the deconstruction of African art, geographies of the body, the male nude and memory. Can we just start by talking about some of these issues, many of them very loaded, which you have been addressing for a number of years? So if we begin perhaps looking at the Celebrate series, which we're in fact sitting in front of now, which are glowing light boxes.
What I wanted to do was I wanted to begin to work in colour. This was in 1994. This is after having done a large body of black and white photographs, which were informed by my experiences while I was living in Scotland and by performance art, basically. Yeah. And I was trained as an engineer, and then I didn't want to work in that field. So the ideal situation for me was I started to work at Transmission Gallery to build up their photographic archive for them, because I realized they didn't have any archive at all. And they had all this wonderful performance art, very hard cutting edge about the body and so on. So I was involved in primarily building that up, and then that also helped and I think influenced my sort of, as you can see, the works are very performative. Anyways, the sort of moving through space, and more importantly, the interaction of the viewer with the work as a sort of something which it's perhaps more like an after image of an artist's intent, which people then take with them. Yeah. Then in '94, I went to the Banff Art Centre, and I was offered a scholarship there to work on a new project, and I decided I wanted to work with colour photography. For me, it's interesting also because when you look at the skin tone in black and white, it's rather monolithic, you know. I wouldn't say impersonal, or in some ways it could be a bit too personal. And I found it was very interesting during very much in the 90s that when you came across coloured images of the black male body, for example, within public space, that's quite something, yeah. Then no longer can they be much more like about artworks, and no longer also could they also be much more focused on the genre of self-portraiture. So I was interested in moving the work beyond maybe the autobiographic or into something else, into their field. I always thought these are perhaps the sort of light boxes that you wouldn't see outside in a bus shelter. So that's probably a good way to describe them, you know. But they do have that glow, the attractions there. We can see with the new advertisings of sport now, you know, there's a certain sexuality within the makeup of the image. So
could we talk a little bit also about the layers, because you use a Hasselblad camera, you're layering the images. Can we talk a little bit about the process? Because the complexity of the process, or this layering, is also very much part of your aesthetic.
Yes. In these works, I look at the layers as a sort of, I think, you know, when you have a straight picture, you have like, i.e. one image, you have within that all the history of documentary photography, truth and all that sort of stuff, you know, actuality. And then once you start mixing different layers and different levels, then for me, you know, this goes much more into the psychological and the metaphysical, because what this means is that, you know, what people are really looking at happened, they are not really sure when on the time scale it happened, the time of the whole essence of the camera capturing time. And I think this is where the Hasselblad is quite interesting, because the Hasselblad is, of course, a camera which defined the moon. Yeah? It's the epitome of reliability and so on. So I think to use this sort of camera in this way, in which it actually fights against its sort of indexical nature of the image, was something which interested me. For me, it's quite a central piece in my practice, I think, this piece, because it allowed me to be able to resolve some of the problems. You have to remember that during the 80s, you can imagine in England, there was like black arts happening. In Scotland, there was nothing happening. What one made during that time didn't quite had a certain things were not so easily understood there. So for me, it was quite interesting to find a way of not shocking people, but at the same time not diluting the strength of what I wanted to say, you know, like, so this was, I think, a really different way of dealing with difference, but a difference which encompasses, you know, being within an environment. And I think during the 90s, it wasn't very cool to talk about identity anymore, no? You know, especially if you were a black artist or you didn't want to do that. So I think when you look at these images where they could almost be so common, but then they're not, you know, then I think for me, these are ways of resolving the issue, yeah?
And you were making these images really through 1994 to 1997.
Yeah.
Also, you use yourself as the central focus, and in these ones, you've got your dreads as well, which is interesting as well. Can we talk a little bit about that, about the hair? Because you relate to that in later work as well, and also your nude. So you're taking issue with cultural identity, nudity, the male body, and also your physique, which is extremely honed and gymnastic in these images as well.
Well, it's the thing about the hair is it's really interesting to look at. The hair is coming back in now. You know, it has like a 5-year cycle every time. There was a period when, like in 92, everybody had to get rid of their hair, you know, and I was one of those people as well. And mine happened when I went back home to Africa, and I was there, and it didn't make sense anymore, you know, because, you know, you wouldn't realize that the complexity of identity was such that perhaps it's time to focus on more what was actually behind the hair, you know, the void, than the appearances now. And also, of course, the hair is very, very sexual, sort of objectification, and it's part of that, you know, part of the using of that, because we're going to talk about another piece called The Hair of the Man later on, which is actually intended to go with these boxes. Because what you see is, you know, in The Hair of the Man, as you can probably remember if you've seen the video, there's a lot of dancing on the bed and so on, and this happens in two places, and this is a sort of another take. This is the still version. This is perhaps a consequence of what the person in The Hair of the Man was dancing about, you know. This being framed by perhaps this band, being and trying to mentally create other spaces through layering.
But also in The Hair of the Man, you sound as well. Can we talk a little bit about the sound? Because that's another aspect of identity, which follows naturally on from your imagery, but you do use voice.
Yes.
And you use accent in your work.
The sound in The Hair of the Man is for me was particularly interesting because it's a track by Humar Bin Hasan, which it's actually hated by African Americans. Yeah. Even though it's in the genre of rap, it's quite different, you know, because, you know, it's a bit critical, it's quite self-critical because it's an interesting use of the word niggers and so on. The language is very strong, and it's perhaps something which is more like the revenge of the underdog, you know, whatever, which comes from a longer period, like people like Prince Farah, you know, reggae and so on, which are like, you know, things where one demonstrates all the things which are very, very bad about oneself so that there's nothing left and you're still there. So what does that mean?
I thought it was very interesting listening to the lyrics and the whole thing of country as well, the use of the word. You can take
the nigger out of the country. But you can't take country out of niggers now.
Exactly. I think that as a phrase in...
I mean, you know, it's amazing. I mean, I wonder what Spike Lee would make of that sort of thing, because I think these are very, very... I think nowadays there are a lot of types of cultures being brandished about. You have the black culture still there. You have contemporary African culture, contemporary African art, you have global art, and you have art which you have English and British art, and you have, and all artists like magpies, of course, have to exist within all sorts of areas, you know, and change faces and whatever. And I think what I like about the voice is that, you know, you have voice with a voice. One is forced, unlike any other media, to make judgment immediately about who this person is and context and who and where. And I think you can't beat that. It's quite a powerful thing. And I think for me, in that, as a soundtrack, what I wanted to do was to have something which was not quite celebratory, but was quite critical of actually what people in the diaspora were doing, you know. And I think what the soundtrack was perhaps questioning was the roles of the diaspora in relation to the other sort of place, which it's a no-go area still nowadays in the arts, because, you know, we see lots of biennales that happen. And what happens if someone like me, I'm now British or European, you know, now. And you have an exhibition in Ghana, and it's not easy. I mean, curators don't want to deal with that, you know, because, you know, you're there, and the people from there, you know, immediately your position as someone in the diaspora who perhaps used to be marginalized but is not anymore, you become the person who's the imaginator, you know. So I think, you know, and I think that is interesting. So I think all these, I try to build all these things into my work, into the aesthetics of it, in a way, because I used to use myself practically for two reasons, practicality, because of course I'm interested in portraiture, you know, or even anti-portraiture, you know, you can say in many ways. But at the same time, it's very important for me to be able to control the exact limits of an image, even. And that's why I work with computers now, because I can do it on pixel level. And nowadays we see different layers now with things like Photoshop, you know. Layering an image is no problem, it's commonplace. But what is different from these pieces is that the layering is fused within the space that the work occupies, you know. It's not a montage. I think philosophically there are differences between them, because within montage one brings different situations around to make certain strong, within a Hatfield context, to make certain strong statements. Here, I think with the layers one can work more on a subliminal level to have something which people discover, and to have an image which reads more like a map. And so therefore the wide areas are important, because sometimes maybe the images are too intense and you need to give people a space to look elsewhere, no?
In your earlier work, another work, diptych here, Arise,
oh, yes,
which is a very early work, 1991.
Yeah, we're looking at it now.
Looking at it now. There's a very strong feeling of the pattern,
yes,
of reflection of the pattern, the body,
yeah,
again.
Yeah.
Where does that come from? Is that again, are you talking about an identity, cultural identity here? Is that, or is it because of your interest in contrasts per se?
The simplest way to describe it is it's probably a sensibility, because I'm Yoruba. The fabric is, I mean, it's essential to the philosophy of Yoruba in many ways, much more than the sculptures. I mean, that's a problem, you know, so in the conceptualism, because once you have fabric, then you have notions of the body, you know, the fabric, the folds, and
very, you said the movement within the fabrics,
different limitations of the fabric being something which doesn't define the shape of the person. I think that's interesting. We look at ethnic wear for Western women now, and I think it's interesting, you know, the whole notion of comfort wear, which can define a certain pattern in a physiological sense, and your physical self or what is projected on you, i.e. your size, your numerical size, is irrelevant. Yes, I think it's interesting. Folds are very different within African philosophy than in Western philosophy. You know, they're not so sexualized in African philosophy, you know. They're much more to do with a lot of light, clay area, the cosmology, and so on. But I think that's where the interest comes from, but the use of it also comes from the contrasts, which is much more my experiences of the different cultural areas that I've lived in and the experiences, you know, and the fact that I guess I always get very scared of making something that is so-called authentic or original, you know. I lived in many places which didn't really have an authentic identity, like Canada, Germany doesn't even have anyway, they're not allowed to, and Scotland. So I think being in England is a bit tricky. I think what I'm trying to say is that, you know, places which have this very given identity and a certain cultural way of doing things are perhaps places which don't inspire me so much more, and I think that is built into the work in many ways. What I like is the paradox of the imagery, which has the male body in it, as you say, it's quite developed and quite masculine. You know, we can use this, yeah, in many ways, yeah. But there's a softness of the fabric, and I think there's quite something quite strong there, you know, because when we look here, you only need to look at men's clothes here. I mean, there's no sense of fabric there at all. There's no feelings at all. Texture's out. Durability is in. Practicality. And, you know, regime. Now, the way I was brought up is, you know, it's It's a sort of sensibility, and this has a lot to do with what also working within the domestic interior as well, to say, well, you know, men do exist inside, you know, they do live in houses too. They have sensibilities of dealing with the domestic space. The work, yes, which is over there is probably a good one to look at, and this sums that up perfectly for me, because you have a piece where there's a woman lying in the bed, and in many ways, we're not sure how old she is, you know, and I think that's also interesting. She looks young. But, and then we see a body, a male body on there.
Which on is
the,
your body?
Which is more on the, me on the wall there. And for a start, it's very dreamy. You're not sure where this happens. It can be, it's called the lighthouse because there's a lot of pun with the likeness and the whiteness of the thing, and which is what actually makes him stand out, no? In relation to her face. One can interchange her face with his, with his head, which is
the
hidden.
Body has the almost body. Become like a silhouette.
It's become a silhouette. It's almost like something light. In her imagination, something which... And I think for me, you know, this work is really about... Quite simply, when you live with somebody, how you fight for space, you know, that's what it's about. So I live with a person who liked to get her 10-hour sleep, and I didn't like to sleep that much, so I did all my things in the evening. Then psychologically, that sets up the relationship that people have within each other, how one negotiates space beyond even cultural things, even up to a personal level. Another work called Spells for Beginners, which was recently at the Tate, at Intelligence, it's also about that, you know, which is actually the two same people are talking essentially not only about their relationship and what happened, but about the space that they allowed each other within their relationships and the impacts of that. I think, for me, these are issues which are still very, very strong. Even though nowadays I make computer installations, you know, the space that you give people to interact with you or your ideas is very important, you know. It seems to take me like 10 years to make a work. It takes me a long time to make sort of pieces, to make works, because not because I work slow, but because I'm always looking for the right sort of opportunity to actually show a piece, because I think it's quite important for me, because the context in these works, for example, we have these works now, which are essentially the experiences I had in Scotland when I was growing up and I was starting to work as an artist, and become even more important now that I'm in England, you know. And I think that's what the Tate Intelligence Show was really about, because, you know, I think that show for me is very Scottish in many ways. It's interesting to see a Scottish show coming up with all the sensibilities and the humour that I have and the wit, yeah, that this have here in the Tate. I think it's quite interesting, you know. I think perhaps it's more interesting to talk about that shift than sort of Black British art or anything like that. I think that is interesting, because that shift must come first, you know, within the broadening of the British experience as we see it, you know. It's only when that is done in an aesthetic sense and a philosophical sense that one can make sense of the multitudes of other cultures that are here, who are already here and have been here for hundreds of years.
I'd like to kind of pull together some of the things we've been talking about by talking about the last documenta show that you were in. And just about your experience of showing within that multitude of artists, and the piece you chose, and why you particularly chose to display that work.
Mm. Well, it's the experience is, well, I mean, what can I say? It's amazing. When you go to Documenta, it's one of the amazing things is that it's an arcade. Arcade for art, you know, which doesn't exist elsewhere. It's complete art. Everybody breathes and lives art, and it's... No one, you know, it happens every 5 years, you know. One has to remember that at that time I have been doing a lot of exhibitions abroad and not in Britain. So the whole selection of me from here in Documenta was problematic in some ways, for want of a better phrase. Of course, we know what the history was, you know. It's like, oh, we need to find, well, Black artists who work with film and the metaphor of Africa. So I was pretty much aware what... how sort of Africa would be seen as, yeah, in there, especially if you looked at the theoretical lectures, which...
The 100 talks, yeah, in 100 days, yeah, which underpinned...
Yeah, underpinned the intellectual... There we have, you know, we have the intellectual capacity of the periphery who argue and philosophize, and then the internal makes the work. And I think that's interesting. And someone like me is caught in between, and I think... I had to be quite sure of what, A, to have fun, because, you know, you don't know when if that's going to be your only ever show there. So you have to have fun. You shouldn't you pretty much have to treat it like another exhibition, even though it's not. Actually, it's not an exhibition, you know. It's not so much about the art, it's about the consequences of works. Because I was pretty much knowing that behind some of the pieces there will be people place works, for example, by Lothar Baumgarten, for example, directly behind, and on the left-hand side, Atlas by Richter, which is biographical. So therefore, you have the video, which is my family, almost like a video diary, but from a sort of different culture. And I think it's really interesting because, you know, what I wanted to look at within that work was to simulate what happens when audiences go through to a place like Documenta, you know, that perhaps very often they're going there to learn about African culture through art. And I guess my statement was that's not the way to do it. That's pretty, because one shouldn't trust artists, you know, because you know what they make is very elusive, you know.
Can you talk about the piece a little specifically?
With the central piece, probably it's the one in the museum. As you enter, the doors open, you go in, and the first image, you follow a crowd procession, and they're quite colorful, they go in, and then there's a sort of, you're in a village context, and if you moved on through there, you see all the other works, the painting of Kerry Marshall and so on, very interesting. And then if you stopped in that room, the interesting for me was that the sound attracts you there, there's the music there, and then because they were shown on monitors at a certain height, which are sort of quite human, you know, they're not gigantic or quite small, once a crowd was there, the work disappeared. So they became like sort of background wallpaper. That was the way in which I was able to resolve a lot of those pressures there, so that I wasn't going to be falling so much into a trap of, oh, yes, somebody coming in to take on the whole weight of non-representation of African artists right in the center. And also I wanted to play with this misconception that, oh, very often in such big exhibitions, artists from the so-called peripheries are always given the opportunities to be right in the entrance where it's very prominent. I said, well, I'll give you something that you can't see, you know, that disappears. There's another piece called Spray, which is on the right-hand side as you go in, and there's music again. You see somebody spending money on somebody's head, and it's not a loop, so you get a sense of this abundance of money and the celebrations, the use or the abuse of money.
I also wanted to talk about the Johannesburg
Biennale
because it's unavoidable in terms of ideas. And and again, thinking about the kind of work you've selected. And
when I get a show, I always have to think. I mean, I have quite a torrid time with curators. Sometimes I say, no, I don't want to show this piece. No, you have to. No, because I think...
Is that because you don't want it to set up a particular dialogue in a particular place that you feel is contradictory to what you're trying to show, or what would be the circumstances, not being too, I mean, we're on tape now, but provocative here, but the kind of circumstances where you would be asked perhaps to show something and you would have an unease about that because of the cultural references that might be made, and you would feel that that was doing something that wasn't the essence of your work, that was making an added dialogue that you wouldn't want to draw out in those. Are there any circumstances where perhaps that's happened?
Well, there is one right now, which is quite a heavy one, and it concerns, it's an exhibition that's actually curated by Okwe Nwezo now, and it's called the Short Century. And it's going to be opening in the Village Duke, and it's traveling everywhere. It's a great show. The show is very black. And there's no problem with that. But the tricky thing for me, though, is that, you know, you have an exhibition like that, which is it's essentially about the politics of resistance in post-colonial Africa. A lot of fantastic theories and a lot of really difficult theories to deal with now, especially for artists. So the piece that was selected for that was a piece called Homeward Bound, which it's a double video projection, which it's also another play on the idea of the return to a sort of mythical center. And the strength of that work is that, you know, the work looks at and argues against such returns to the roots in many ways, but within a show like this, it actually cements and counteracts the ethics of the work. So you can see that's what I was talking about. Then I had some objection to that, and I thought, well, I don't think that is the right context for that work, you know, and that becomes interesting, the various arguments I have with curators and so on. I have to add, I was also trained as a curator. That didn't work. Maybe that doesn't help. But so therefore, I can see what I'm trying to say is you can see what the powers of an exhibition, you know, what actually a piece can say, and how that power, of course, as an artist, when you exhibit a piece of work, that power is taken away from you, you know. The audience makes it, but it's the interaction of the curator nowadays within, and the politics of curating within the selection of artists, you know, and in many ways, what is actually happening to curating nowadays? Is it more about curating artists of certain historical values who have had their own histories, and it's then much more about the creative arrangements of such artists aside from their work? And I think that's an interesting thing. And I think sometimes an artist, you just have to think about that, you know, and say, well, you know, I'm not so sure about that because I think that's a bit too much there. Other times, I put a piece of text in because I think that is the most lasting piece. There was an exhibition called Trafic in Belgium 2 years ago. I didn't feel that I had to put a piece of work in there because here I will be the African artist that came from Document, that coming into Belgium to look at all the issues of diaspora in an area which has got all immigrants in it. No, thank you. No, yeah, a piece of text is much more nicer about those issues because I think what happens about that is that in many ways and one can attain a certain element of accuracy that's very, very difficult. You know, you can, at least in a piece of text, you can say what you want to say. You know, in a piece of work, that's not that easy. Yeah, I think.
I'd like to talk about the Johannesburg Biennale as well, because you had a presence there. And was that the first time you had exhibited back in Africa or in Africa that for that exhibition?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's an interesting point. It's nice to remind me of that, actually, because I think you have to remember that this was 97, and before that, you know, as a Nigerian, if I'd gone to South Africa to work or do anything, I would be banned for life from going to Nigeria, so it's quite heavy. Yeah? So therefore, when I got the invitation to exhibit in this show, for me it was, you know, just suffice to say that some things go beyond your own work. You know. I mean, for me, it was quite an interesting situation because I was there, and in some ways, what I was making didn't really matter, you know, because the fact, it was much more about the fact that I was there and what I had achieved. So, you know, and the peer pressure that sets against you, other artists from Soweto who were brilliant artists but would never get a chance. And, you know, you're having beers with these guys and these women, you know, and they're talking, they're showing you their portfolio thing. But they're not there, and you're there, you're the one that's from Europe that has all the chances, da, 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 da. And the first immediate reaction, of course, which is very humanistic, is to give business cards and list of all the curators I know abroad, you know. And luckily, some of those artists are showing abroad now. It's great. So I'm quite happy about that, because it was a show which really made me look at actually what I was really doing with my work. In particular, you know, the selection of the work for that were a series of black and white pictures, light boxes in the basement. I looked at all the nice clean galleries. I said, no, I don't want to come down here to do that. Give me the basement of where, you know, certain things have happened. And these works were installed in them so that, you know, I had like a huge crowd of local people coming in to look at the stuff because A, some people were saying to me that they'd never seen black people in pictures in an exhibition before. And I mean, so I can't say anymore. So for me, that was quite a moving experience because you look at that and the whole notion of the subject of me in the picture and all those experiences I've had in relationship to the framing of the picture of the culture just got blew away, you know. It became like, okay, so other people can look at that, and that's actually what I wanted to achieve in the work, to say, well, okay, I might use myself sometimes in the pictures, but I think when I was in South Africa, you know, it was quite clear that the person in the picture stood for something much more bigger than the personal, and I think for me that was quite a big thing. In terms of the politics of the exhibitions and so on, and the way in which everything was surrounded, there was a very interesting scene which happened in Cape Town, which is it happened in this old fort called the Cape of Good Hope, which is actually where the slaves were sent out. And I came across this amazing scene, and I made a piece of work about this, which is still in progress. You have on the one side the post-colonial art crew, or even more specifically, women artists of color, really wonderful works. Then there was the Biennale crowd who were around and the people they know. And on the opposite side, there was like the fort, because it's a living fort. So you got all the army people coming in, you know, carrying guns around, you know. Yeah. And you get searched when you go in. And so you got those two sides. And in the middle, there was a possession happening of a recreation of an original Dutch and colonial tea party, with the black maids on top serving in, as it was, and nice Mozart music playing. And how's that for a sense of place, no? This is for once. But nobody could make sense of that because you know, for the people who were walking in Biennale, this was just too much. You know, you couldn't deal with that. You know, it was too much. But for me, I saw this as a good chance. So I went in. Of course, as you know, I'm into possessions and crowds and so on. So I did this filming. And these people were very interested, you know, because they said, oh, he's black. He wants to film us. Oh, I said, oh, that's Schubert's Fifth Symphony. And they said, oh, he knows this. And I spoke a bit of German to them. And they invited me to film the whole thing. So I filmed that. And for me, the interesting thing about that was that this relationship between, you know, this person, for me, you know, the moment this recognition that I was somebody who was not only black, but sort of Nigerian, but lived in Europe and, you know, understood all those things, that this elevated you above those people who were serving, who were also women, yeah, there's a gender thing there too, serving on top. And the tensions that I created was fascinating for me. So I think overall, the whole experiences of that show, I think for me, was very, very moving, because when I came back, I thought, you know, I have to now look at certain works and look at how the whole notions of how people participate in the work is much more fleshed out and much more opened up to either to interpretation or misinterpretation, and that's part of the building of the work in it, and that's actually the work.